Sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry, where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.
You're listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world. Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. Yes, I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from far afield because we're on our sabbatical, Wendy and I. She's here with me, and this is the second week out. We've got 10 weeks of sabbatical, and we're going to be far afield for the first 6 weeks. I think we're going to be in Scotland, and after that, who knows where we'll be. Instead of being regularly at Unity Fort Worth, I've left that. We've got a wonderful temporary acting senior minister, Patricia Bass. If you're in that part of the world, check her out. And if you're in my part of the world, come and see me. We'd love to see you here. We are in a place called Pool U, okay? Pool U. It's in the Western Highlands. It's on a sea loch. It's about 70 miles northwest of Inverness in Scotland, but it's way out in the middle of nowhere, and it's absolutely beautiful here, and it actually has a microclimate, and it's influenced by the Gulf Stream, and therefore there's this beautiful Inverview Gardens that's like 100 acres or so of subtropical gardens that we hope to visit tomorrow, and the garden here and the place we're staying in is very beautiful too. I think they're benefiting from the microclimate that exists in this particular valley. A lot has happened since last week when we broadcast from the Ochil Hills near Stirling in the lowlands of Scotland. And we'll talk about some of that. We'll also talk about some of the things we've been musing about spiritually in the last week. There's been a lot of that going on too. And but first of all, I want to welcome once again Wendy to the show. Hi, Wendy.
Hello. Good to be here.
It's a beautiful evening, and we're glad we're with you all. And just want to talk about some of the things we experienced. We were in the Spey Valley for a while, which is a beautiful salmon and trout river that runs in the north of Scotland, and famous for all the distilleries that along that river. But what fascinated me the most, of course, it's always good to enjoy a fine dram of single malt scotch when you want to. But a couple of things fascinated me, and that is that when you go around Scotland, you see a lot of the Pictish forts. And when I was a kid growing up in Britain, you know, we knew that the Picts lived in Scotland, and then the Scots supposedly came over from Northern Ireland in the 5th century. And took over from the Picts. Since I've been here in Scotland, I realized that's not quite as simple as that. It's they did blend and meld together over the centuries, but the Picts were still going strong even until the 8th and 9th centuries. It was the Vikings that really overwhelmed them, and eventually I guess they assimilated with Vikings and with the Scots. So Scots really have a blend of Pictish, Scottish and Norse blood in their veins. But we went to one of the places called Burghead, I think it was, in on the coast, the Moray coast of Scotland, And it's an old Pictish fort. It was one of the largest Pictish forts, and it survived until the 9th century and was burned by the Vikings. But we went out. It's on a peninsula sticking out into the sea. Very beautiful. We both felt that energy, didn't we, that existed there. And there were whale boats all around, but we didn't see any whales that day. But didn't matter because the feel of the place was very beautiful. Do you want to say anything about that day?
Well, it's just interesting how you can go someplace and go, whoa, there's energy here. You know that there was ancient history going on, and that the people walking around just in town, that they're part of that history of that particular place. But when you do feel the vibe of an ancient history, when you're someplace, it's an interesting feeling.
Yeah, it definitely is. And like you say, that sense of continuity is there. There's a tower. It looks like a big stone, about 8 feet tall, something like that, and it's covered in pitch and tar. And supposedly every year they take it and parade it or something, or at least they light it, and then they take torches around town to celebrate the New Year's, I think it was. And I thought, you know, this is very ancient tradition of lighting fires, you know, especially in the dark part of the year to represent the light and coming of the new. And ancient peoples have been doing that for thousands of years. So there it was, and it still smelled of pitch around this little hill cairn that was at the back of the Pictish fort. And locals still do that to this day. So it's a fascinating thing to me. So after that, we went to Findhorn. And many of us, you know, who have been in the New Age or New Thought movement are familiar with Findhorn and the community there, the foundation, and all that happened in Findhorn, the exceptionally large cabbages they were growing at one point in their history, and but also their fascination with angels, the angel presences in nature. And we went there and explored it. It's open to the public, and you can wander around. I think about 500 people live there. And they lived originally in a caravan park, a trailer park, but it's been transformed into an eco-village with all kinds of interesting buildings made in different styles, a lot of eco-awareness there. And their basic principles are turn within to the still small voice, which is, of course, is a very unity idea. Be aware of the sacredness of nature and the fact that it's a living presence. And then serve, love in action, service to the world. So these three principles or three focus ideas would be very much comfortable for those who attend Unity Church. What we found, though, that there wasn't a whole lot of overt spirituality there. They hold a number of classes and groups and meditation groups, but there's no central worship or anything like that. And I kind of missed that because I was hoping there'd be some kind of focalized center where people did some intentional work that held the community together. And I know you noticed that too, right, Wendy?
Yes, I did. I that was one of the very first things that we noticed, was that there was no like central. I mean, there's the Universal Hall, and they obviously use it, but there's nothing that speaks of a ritual or a meeting, a sharing of community, like in some of the other spiritual communities that we've been in. Paul and I related it back to the ashram and doing daily pujas that the monks do at various ashrams, and that it was missing from Findhorn. But we did notice some other things, so.
Yeah, we noticed that the Universal Hall that Wendy referred to is exceptionally beautiful, and it's made in a unique way. A lot of it's made out of interesting shapes of wood and glass. None of it is nailed or together. It's all fitted together. And there was a particular wall that looked like one of those walls that you see in Peru, where there's hardly any space between the stones themselves. So That looked very fascinating. And we walked inside. It's very beautiful. They opened it up to all kinds of events, concerts, art venue. And at the back of it, there is a lovely a restaurant, their organic restaurant. A lot of people were hanging out there. And then on the other side, there's a beautiful little fountain and garden where people could sit. So that is probably a high point of the community, is that beautiful, beautiful hall. And the energy there is quite strong.
Oh, wait. There was also the general store, with everything in the general store was either locally made or it was organic materials that you could buy there. And then there was also some other shops. There was a pottery shop that we stopped and spoke with the potter for a little bit. She'd been there for 40 years.
A long time.
A long time. And then there was also a weave shop, and we went in the weave shop also. And these are sort of like little huts or something that are not very finished. They're very rustic. And while we were in the weave shop, I told Paul when we walked out we walked around, and there wasn't much to sell that she had for sale in the shop. She was actually weaving, and somebody else was in there weaving. And we spoke just briefly to her. She just said hello, and that was it. And we walked out. And when we walked out, I told Paul, I said, for just a split second, I could feel what it would be like to be a part of the community, a part of a community that all carried the same belief, where everybody held to the highest esteem that unconditional love for each other, and that looking out for each other, being a part of a community, though, that held that same belief, and doing what you loved, creating something and doing what you love. And just, it was like there was just this release of freedom that it felt like. Then I thought, you know, they still have to have worries, though. They still have things they have to take care of and stuff. But it would sure be nice to take care of things when you're in a community that's supportive of each other, a tight-knit community living there and working that's supporting of each other.
Right. And we were musing about how, you know, we try and create that in our own church, you know, in the sense that it's a community with many things going on. We have art from various artists in our community. We have concerts. We have events that are creative in some way or other. We keep a beautiful garden. We try many different ways to create a sense of community, and I think we can do it even better, you know. But it's an ongoing thing, and as you alluded to, Wendy, I think there's always difficulty when you have an organization. There's always some people who don't like how it's run or whatever, and et cetera, et cetera. And certainly there's some things around FinTorn that, you know, some people have criticized. But one of them is that, you know, you have to be fairly wealthy just to live there, because some of the new houses that are being built are very expensive. So you have to have a certain level of income to even think about living at FinTorn. But I would recommend it if anybody's ever in Scotland and have a mind to go up to that part, check it out. And I think you'll enjoy it. It's a beautiful place. And it's in this beautiful setting on FinTorn Bay. And then if you go down the road a little bit, you come to the town of FinTorn. And the other side is a beautiful beach. It happened to be raining when we were there, so we had a lovely walk in the English, and the Scottish, I should say, Scottish rain. Which tends to happen quite a bit, but it doesn't last long. It rains and then it stops, and then you go about your business, and then off we go again. We've got a little more rain. So our biggest adventure, I think, this week has been going to the Isle of Orkney, Isles of Orkney. And I went there 40 years ago when I was a young person, inexperienced young man. And went there just before I went to India. I thought, well, I'll hitchhike to Orkney, and put me in good stead for getting ready to go to India, not in the same climate zone, but in this, but in the sense camping and hitchhiking and, you know, getting used to the life on the road. Had a wonderful experience there and visited many of the ancient sites and held it in my consciousness for many years. So it was interesting to go back and certainly take Wendy to see it. And it fulfilled all my expectations. It was still as beautiful as I remember it, the beautiful yellow-green light, the amazing landscape that's been farmed by people for thousands of years, and yet it also has beautiful meadows and wildlife and birds, etc. So it's a wonderful place, and it definitely has a mystical feel. I would say it's intensely utilized by the people, and you see all these little farms dotted over the whole landscape. Reminds me of the Amish in some sense. They're really dedicated to the land. But it also has a sense of the spiritual, and there's more Neolithic sites, I think, on Orkney than anywhere in Europe, and some quite amazing sites as well. First impressions on it for you, Wendy, what would you say?
Well, it's a beautiful place. And back to that feeling of ancient history, there's every place you look, there is something that points you to the history that has happened on the island. And we met a lady that we were staying with at Brinkey's Hill. Brinkey's Brae was the name of the place. And she kept on talking about, it was a house that was built up on the hill that overlooks the harbor. And it has rolling hills all around it. And she kept on talking about her father walking the fields. And it just every time she would say it, and you would look out at the fields, and you'd think that a farmer, you know, walking these fields, that the farmer before him walked them, and that the farmer before him walked them. And it was just, it was a lovely feeling to be a part of that community for that time. I was going to read something that was on the ferry coming over. There was a saying on it. So we were in a town called Stromness, and on the ferry, there was a etched in the glass. It says Stromness, called by the Viking Hanavo, which means haven inside the bay. Has a fine natural harbor sheltered from the west by a string of low hills, Brinkey's Brae, and from the east by two little tidal islands, its homes.
Right. And it's an amazing little town actually spread along the side of that bay. And it used to be a whaling town. It was big with the Hudson's Bay Company and the adventures there in the Northwest Passage, trying to find a way over to the Far East, and of course then the whole place became very important to the British, the Royal Navy, back in the 19th and 20th centuries. It was one of the finest harbors, Scapa Flow, in the world, and so the British fleet was often in there. And the German fleet was taken there after World War One, but the admiral of the fleet, German fleet, chose to scuttle the ships and sink them all rather than the British having them. Most of them were salvaged, but there's still some wrecks at the bottom of the Scapa Flow, and so there's that fascinating history too. So in all ways, a very beautiful place, and of course the seafood is excellent. But when we come back after the break, we'll talk a little bit about ancient feeling again. I know that's a theme today in the show. We went to a number of places that, first one was Scapa Brae, of course, the famous site where you see a Neolithic village with five or six huts. And they've reconstructed one now at the visitor center, so you can see exactly how people lived And it's fascinating to think about that and how they worked so hard, but were so ingenious about capturing food, planting things. It was the early times of agriculture, and they're moving beyond just hunter-gatherer to a more sophisticated society, and a fascinating place. And we also visited a number of other ancient sites. But let's listen to these messages from Unity, and then we'll come back and talk some more. All right, join us then.
If Unity Online Radio has helped you grow spiritually through programs like this one, please consider supporting this online radio programming. Visit www.unity.fm and click on Donate Now. Thank you for helping us continue to serve as the voice of an awakening world.
Kintsugi is an ancient Japanese art form of fusing broken pottery pieces together by filling the cracks with gold. The resulting piece is not only restored and visually stunning, it also takes on a new life. Whatever has happened in the past, however broken we may feel, we can be whole again by filling our lives with the transformative power of God. Our experiences make us unique. The presence of God makes us whole. As Paul wrote in his letter to the Romans, be transformed by the renewing of your minds, so that you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. Remember, with God, all things are possible.
This Mindful Moment is brought to you by Daily Word Magazine. Finding time for the positive reminders in Daily Word is easy with the digital edition, perfect for smartphones and readers on the go. Take advantage of our 30-day free trial to the online magazine, plus a daily email with the word for the day and the Daily Word app. To sign up for a free 30-day trial, visit unityonlineradio.org/dailyword.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find.
You've been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
All right, welcome back to today's show. Here we are, Wendy and I. We're in Scotland. We're talking about our adventures so far, and it came to me during the break that maybe other people aren't as fascinated with Neolithic Age monuments as I am. Maybe ancient history is like, meh, whatever. But the thing is, I think once we understand the continuity of these things, I think it's not something, that's dry and boring. It's all about rocks and ancient, implements and stuff like that. And once we understand that these were living, breathing human beings that are actually linked to us, they're part of our ancestry, that we have their blood, their DNA in our bodies, that then we are in direct connection to those ancestors. And that's a powerful thing, I think. That's the sense that we in sense are them, that we're the race memory is still strong in us. And I was looking at a picture that the reconstruction of a young woman from that period, and she looked amazingly contemporary and modern. And I thought, you know, it's really not that long ago. She probably thought and felt many of the things that we do today. She certainly wasn't on texting all the time. She was way too busy for that. But the deep core things, I think, remain the same.
And then there was graffiti in one of the old tombs that the Vikings had broken into the tomb and had sheltered themselves there. And I've forgotten exactly what the graffiti said, but it was graffiti. I mean, graffiti in a tomb from the Viking age. But one of them, I think they said said something about like Eric bedding Olga or something like that.
That's right. Yeah, some of them were about, you know, the usual stuff. You know, Hrothgar was here or whatever. Yeah, but they were also beautiful images as well that have been carved. The irony is that they were graffitiing a tomb that was predated them by 4,000 or 5,000 years, and yet the Viking carvings themselves now are ancient because they're over 1,000 years. So fascinating indeed, because we, instead of it being Olga, which they haven't graffitied, the graffiti itself is worth looking at.
So one of the other things that I thought about that we had in common with them, other than food and drink, because they were, of course, having to survive, and they came together, they cooked together, and they ate together, and that was their community, was also that they had rituals, and they had spiritual or some type of religious rituals that they did. And so they knew that that was important to them. Maybe they might have been a little more superstitious than what we are today, not understanding the science that we understand today. But they knew the feeling. They had the religious feeling, and they had that need to do a ritual in order to be a part of the earth and to be a part of a community.
And there's a number of ritual objects that were found on the site, on these sites, that look like balls that would fit onto a staff or something, and they're interestingly carved. And it's almost like a power stick. When you hold that prayer stick, you have the power of to speak the word. And nobody really knows, though, what exactly they were used for, but they definitely had a connection to spirit, because a lot of their sites aligned with the sun and with the seasons, so they were very much in tune with the rhythm of the seasons. Anyway, that brings us to our spiritual exercises for the week, and Wendy has one that she wants to read from the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, and we'll talk a little bit about that and our thoughts, our spiritual thoughts this week.
So I think I said the last time that I had brought the Yoga Sutras by Patanjali to read or to browse through, really. It's quite a thick book. And so I've just been opening it at random, and interesting enough that whatever I open to seems to be fitting to whatever my thoughts happen to be or what's going on around me. So where I opened on, actually it was July 31st, was in the appendix. And it reads, although it is unchanging, consciousness becomes aware of its own intelligence by means of pervading the forms assumed by the intelligence. So when I read that, I mean, I know I'm a big believer in everything happening at once, that there is no linear time, that it's a spiral effect. And that although it's our consciousness is changing because we're entering intelligence into it, or ideas or thoughts, living the moments that we live, it still is the same form. It's still the same. It's still unchanging because it's already existed. Everything we thought is already existing. We're just seeing the form because the thought has entered our consciousness, but it was already there.
Right, and I think what's important about this, or what was fascinating to me about this, is that, you know, we can get trapped in the world of forms, name and form, naming things and believing that the forms themselves are the reality. And if you are, you know, an empiricist or whatever, you believe, you know, life is what you can see around you. Seeing is believing. And yet the forms themselves come and go. But they don't. It's not that they're illusory or totally illusions, because the spirit pervades them, so without being limited by them. So in other words, the spirit is within me and helps me enjoy my life on all levels, including the physical, including the emotional. And yet I'm not limited by the physical or the emotional, because I know that the spirit within me is timeless, is non-action, is limitless, empty, if you like, or open. Once we understand this, we're not confined or confused by the experiences we have. We're simply enjoying the play of the experiences that we have. I think it's in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that, you know, I am, or the spirit is within everything, and yet not bound by anything, in it but not of it. So, and Jesus talked about this idea too. So it's a fascinating subject, I think, not just because it's a nice philosophical idea, because, you know, we always say this every week, nice ideas are great, but we want to be real. You know, how can I live my life more effectively? I think it is a very effective thing when you can understand that the spirit pervades everything, gives it life, gives it energy and joy, possibility, but it's not limited by those things. So it's good, therefore, to change our plans. And part of the trip that we're on right now is the ability to be flexible. You know, we didn't know where we were going. We had some basic ideas, but we tried to go to one island, and there were so many tourists that we decided, okay, we'll go somewhere else. You know, we were flexible enough to shift. And I think that's part of life. You know, you have to be flexible enough to say, well, let's see where the adventure takes us this time. And once we understand spirit is always there, it doesn't matter the way the forms show up, because something wonderful will always be there for us. That's my understanding. So this team, it's not just a nice idea.
No, it's not just a nice idea, because it is. I think it's very important, because we think that we have an original, that something's happening to us, and that it's original to us, and it's not necessarily original. It is our own unique twist of a situation, whether it be a grieving a loss, or whether it be falling in love, or having anxiety over your children. Those things have always existed, and it's our own unique individual take on it. Not that. So that makes it real to you. That makes it real to you, but it's always been around. Those things, and going back to the ancient ruins, you can see where they had those struggles. They had things that happened to them. We looked at a skull that a lady probably had cancer in her mouth. We looked at something else that, you know, where they were working hard. We were talking to a lady that had lived on the island forever.
All her life, you know.
All her life, forever. All her life. And she was quite up in her age, but I looked at her hands, and her hands were just, they were very flexible and very, very well proportioned and flexible. But she was talking about not having electricity until 1950-something. You know, she has a different look on the electrical bill, probably, than what I have.
Right. Yeah, it's amazing that the island didn't get electricity until 1953, I think it was. And so, you know, they were used to using other forms for lighting and heating. And she said that when the electricity arrived, it was a miracle. It was like, oh, my God, you know, we can do so much. We don't have to work so hard. Of course, I think one electric socket is 6 servants. So how many sockets do you have in your house? You know, that's how many servants you have. So we all live like kings and queens compared to how it was even a couple of hundred years ago. That's a wonderful thing. The downside is we're so filled with expectations of luxury that we've lost our touch and connection to the earth. You know, and one thing that you felt about these ancient peoples is they were deeply connected to the earth, to the rhythms of the seasons, to the fact that they were so skilled at hunting and using implements at hand, you know, using shells and bones and flints and whatever to fashion some amazing things. And these structures have lasted 5,000 years. The one at Maze Howe, the tomb, is made out of blocks of stone that were gathered miles away, brought there, and created this beautiful domed tomb. It's covered in earth. But it's been there for 5,000 years. And how many of our homes can we say will still be around in 5,000 years? So even with no electricity, no modern implements, they were able to fashion something quite remarkable. So I think there's always things to learn, even from, quote, the primitive. You know, and sometimes it's good, I think, for us to go back to our primitive. There's a yearning, isn't there? I think that's why we go to sweat lodges and the dance is sweat our prayers or whatever. So I want to get back to that visceral feeling of being connected to the earth. So one other thing that came to me while we were studying the ideas within the Bhagavad Gita and Yoga Sutras. I think we have our landlady has just come here, if you can hear in the background. I'll keep moving on here. In the teachings of Dogen, the great Zen master of Japan, he talks about being time. And again, it's the same idea that there is this linear sense of time, but really it's not true. There's just being. And he says spring isn't changing into summer. Spring is spring and summer is summer. Wood does not become ash. There's wood and then there's ash after it's burned. It's not a question of the linear progression of things. It's a question of enjoying each moment as it is. So when it's spring, you enjoy spring. When it's summer, you enjoy summer. That's only when we link them all together and have this sense of continuity and then the sadness looking back at what was and then fear about what might come. It's only when that happens that we have pain. But when we can just be present to what is, that the wood is just the wood. If it turns to ash one day, then we'll enjoy the ash as ash, but not to conflagrate the two together. And I don't know if that makes any sense to anybody, but it makes sense to me because, I was terribly nostalgic when I was young, always looking back at something that I didn't know what it was I was looking back at. Now it's not like that. I don't need to look back. It's all here in this present moment. And it was good in a way to go back to Orkney after 40 years and see myself again because, you know, I was a 24-year-old. Now I'm a 64, almost 65-year-old. And you think, wow, 40 years have passed. I'm back at this place of amazing continuity. The light and the feel is just the same. And so it's a sense of a cyclic nature of things. All right. We are going to head off in the next few days up to the Isle of Lewis. But today we went to a beautiful part of Scotland, northwest Scotland. I can highly recommend it. It's off the beaten path. Not many people get along it. And in fact, there's some places where it's just a single track road with passing places. And that's the only road that exists up there. So far from being a 6-lane highway, it's just a tiny little road cutting through this amazing landscape. These sea locks and locks huge mountains, etc. So it's very good in that regard, enjoyable, and we thoroughly enjoyed going down through it. It's part of the Scotland 500. You can do a circle all around the northwest part, and it's very stark and otherworldly. And by the way, check out my Facebook posts. I've been putting up pictures on that. And we'd love to hear from you if you've got any thoughts about some of the ideas that we're sharing. Let us know, because we'd love to be interacting with you. You can email me at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. Let's see. Wendy's still out chatting, so I'm a little distracted here, if I can hear them in the background. But I'll put my spiritual self together here and focus and not be distracted by that. We've been out 2 weeks, and I've been musing about releasing the church for a while and not worrying about it, you know, because that sense, if you're going to get away, if you're going to do a sabbatical, you have to let go of your other world and know that it's okay. I've been in touch a little bit because I've got friends and family, but not really connecting with the place I work, and it's so important to me. But it's so important that I want to get away from it so I can come back with fresh eyes, I think, and that's important too. So next few weeks, the next 3 weeks, we're going to spend with very little travel. So be able to put down and you know, in a place for a while and go deeper with our contemplation and see where that leads, and that should be very good. So in the next few days, we're going to go to the beautiful gardens I mentioned earlier in Vrew, that is this subtropical garden. So I'm looking forward to that and experiencing that. And then doing a little business, because there's always business to catch up on. All right. I'm hoping Wendy's coming back. But she's not. Because she had another quote, I think, for us. And I wanted to say, too, one of the things I'm thinking of we can do over the next few weeks is do some audio interviews with the interesting people we've met along the way, and then send that to our engineer. He can put it up as part of the show, because right now it's hard to synchronize having people talk with us at the time we're doing the show. So I think that might be a way to move around that. And so look forward to that in the next couple of weeks. Okay, Wendy's back. We could hear you talking in the hall there, Wendy, but that's okay. That's all right. This is live show, so you never know what's going to happen. But you had another quote, didn't you? I thought that you wanted to talk about or some other ideas that you wanted to present to us today that you've been thinking about this week. Maybe I'm wrong, but I thought you did.
No, I had a few, but I'm
talking. Yeah, there we go.
Sorry,
all right. All right.
Sorry, I was off on another adventure.
You're off on another adventure. And this brings me to the subject that I wanted to talk about a lot, distraction.
I did have something that I thought was interesting about the lady. Our lady that was in Brinky Bay, Bray, and she was I felt a kinship with her, because she was running her B&B by herself and raising children, and she had they were in their teenage years, and I thought she was working so hard, and it brought me back to a time when I was single and running a business and raising a child, and it gave me an opportunity to look back and think, did I act like that, where I was just... It was like I handled everything, and she was running around busy as she could be, doing everything in a really busy fashion. And I thought, you know, you can really get yourself to the point where you're so busy that you don't pay attention to what's going the beauty that's surrounding you. And when she finally stopped, and started talking to us and quit busying herself around, and she started talking about her dad who owned the property and owned the Brinkey's Bray that was there, and she relaxed, and her whole face relaxed, and her whole demeanor changed when she was thinking about walking in the fields and what it was like. And one of the things she brought up, though, was that the land had been sold off, and that somebody had bought the land, and then somebody else had bought it, and that they had developed a portion of it that was close to her. And she was saying, you know, she went down to the commission and talked to them and tried to say no, that that was not appropriate use for the property and that it was supposed to be left open. And she had this B&B, and the fields were supposed to be part of the, you know, the experience, et cetera. And so she was turned down. And so then later, Paul and I talked about that and talked about that phenomena of what happens to that individual person's dream. And how you take it to heart. And she even said that. She said she took that dream and into her heart, and she was holding on to it, and that she had to release that. And she had cancer of the sternum, and she said she had to release that dream, and she had to not take it so personally. So things evolve the way they're supposed to evolve. And I know that you know, when you see progress happening, I know Paul says every time there's a green space that's been built on, he says, no, that was supposed to be a green space. But progress happens, and it's nice to have that rural feeling. But you at the same point in time, there's people that are in the community that come along, and they have a different point of view. They have a different style about them, and they have a different way of living. And it's back to that. It sure would be nice to live in a community where we all had that wanting to take care of the earth and wanting to take care of the things around us. And we, when we were on the road and we were looking at a particular site that was a geology setting, and it had a plaque, and on the plaque there was a I've forgotten who it was by. It was by, hold on just a minute, let me see. It was by the Scotland's Outdoor Responsible. And it said, take responsibility for your own actions, respect the interest of other people, care for the environment. And so that was like a code that a Scottish outdoor access code is what it was. So take responsible for your own actions, respect the interest of others, and care for the environment.
Right. So it's larger than just what we want, right? As individuals, I think, you know, we laud the idea of rugged individualism in the United States, for instance, and there's nothing wrong with that. You know, it's great to have individuals who are self-made and do all the things that they do because of that focus, that energy around that. Some of the great scientists, artists, sports people have that focus, and that's wonderful. But I think the other side of that is we're all in this together, and we have to understand that we don't function very well if we're all a bunch of individualists. We have to come together and understand with empathy what it feels like to be someone else. This is hugely important. And I think it's the same with the environment. The environment is a finite resource. Even though we believe in infinity of possibilities, in every drop of water there's an infinity. So there's that spaciousness within everything, but yet the macro environment is limited, and so we have to look after it wisely and well. And I'm a big advocate of keeping open spaces, but I know that's not always possible. You know, we must develop everything. But I think why open spaces are important is there's that sense of organic growth return to nature to a degree. You know, when we give ourselves over to development, it's not organic anymore. It's imposed upon the environment. And I think the best environments are the ones that organically develop. So there's a sensitivity, and the people understand the way that environment works. Like Wendy's talking about walking around a field, and you know, the all the nuances of that, the soil, the way the crops grow, which part of the field is good for certain things, and so you don't want to harm that. You want to enhance that. And I've noticed a lot of the Royal Society for Protection of Birds have gone around asking land owners to plant seeds. Will they allow them to plant seeds that will encourage wildflowers, that encourage birds, etc.? So you can still have this intense agriculture, but you also got patches of wildflowers. And you see that a lot on Orkney, where they've done that and allowed that to happen. Good for the environment.
Oh, in Finhorn, the homes that were built there, they were built around a very organic manner. They were not built just straight in a row, and they were built so that the sun was in, they had passive solar. They were built into the sort of the hickety-pickety around the curvature of the topography. And their gardens were all organic and growing together. So it wasn't just one person's and then the next, then the next. So, and they had some common areas, some common ground area also that was gardened.
Right. And, you know, we may say, well, that's nice. But, you know, in the world of reality, we've got limited amounts of money. We have to live in a tract house or whatever. But I think there's always chances to make something beautiful wherever you are. And it only takes a certain attitude to bring something special to a place, to a community. And join a community that has those values, you know, that nurtures that within ourselves. So, you know, maybe...
brought to a community that makes the community, the individual.
Right. And we get to choose... and we don't have to buy into all the craziness that the media would have us believe in. We've talked about this before, but nothing wrong with the news, but you have to take it with a large pinch of good old salt, as they say. So anyway, food for thought, the idea that the presence pervades everything, so you don't have to get lost in the world of form. And yet also that sense that the forms that spirit pervades are beautiful and need to be nurtured and enhanced. And that's part of the beauty, the balance of living in the world, but not of the world. As I said, if you want to contact us, email me at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. Check out the Facebook page, Paul John Roach. Ask to join if you'd like. And next week we'll be in the wild and woolly west of the Outer Hebrides, where the next place is Iceland or Canada. So we'll be looking out onto that sea and talking with you some more about our adventures. So thanks again for listening into this show, World Spirituality, and all the other shows on the Unity Online Network, keeping this voice of an awakening world on the air. Wendy, what have you got to say, final thoughts before we go today?
Well, I guess my final thoughts are, I see my community, my people that I know, my friends, my people that I know from my church, from my work, from my neighborhood, from my part of the world, that I see them in the people that are walking down the streets here in Scotland, and my heart joins then with the people here in Scotland, because I can see that they have neighbors and that they have children and they're raising families and they are enjoying the life. And so that connects me back to remembering my family and remembering the people that I know at home, and I send my love and feel the energy of y'all being back there. It means a lot to me.
Yeah, I concur with that, and we're all one. That's very obvious when you meet people around the world, and we've had some wonderful interactions so far on this trip. But we also feel very connected with everyone that listens into this show, all the people in our community at Unity Fort Worth, all our friends and family. And we may be thousands of miles away, but there's no time or space to spirit. So, all right, we're at the end of the show. Thanks for listening, and hope to talk with you next week. All right, bye-bye now.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
Notice how the funniest things happen when we stop taking ourselves too seriously and step out boldly? Listen to Funniest Thing with Daryl and Ed as these unlikely saints administer a refreshing dose of laughter and love that will inspire you to step out boldly and experience the funniest things. Join the discussion with Daryl and Ed live every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Central Time on Funniest Thing, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
When we think of something priceless, we may envision a rare jewel or a masterpiece of art. In our minds, their value may be partially based on the fact that they're not easily found or duplicated. We tend to place greater worth in such things and may overlook the everyday treasures each one of us already possesses. Regardless of our individual tastes and perceptions, there is one thing we all value, a treasure we constantly seek, peace of mind. Ironically, peace isn't rare. It's an unlimited and ever-present gift that lives within each of us, waiting to be found. I can uncover my buried treasure today. Peace is priceless. Peace can begin with me.
To find a Unity Church near you, please visit our website at www.unity.org.
Just like life, grief is a journey, not a destination. Whether it is loss of life, relationship, security, or simply the process of change, have you given yourself permission to begin your journey of grief? Have you yielded to the gift of grace? Join Reverend Chaz Wesley every Thursday at 5 p.m. Central on a virtual navigation from grief to grace, and explore new horizons of empowerment, significance, and support. Only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
I'll light a candle in your name.
spiritually conscious living start now. For a time-tested method to live with purpose and release your infinite potential, tune in to the Yoga Hour, Living the Eternal Way, with Yogacharya Ellen Grace O'Brien, every Thursday morning at 10 a.m. Central, 8 a.m. Pacific, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.